One of our most important guests, Gerald Celente, with us tonight. So many things are happening. Gerald, of course, is the founder and director of the Trends Research Institute and is the number one trend analyst. And lots going on to talk about, including the economy, what ISIS is doing, what that whole issue is, Federal Reserve, you name it, we've got it tonight with Gerald Celente right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Gerald Celente with us. And as I mentioned, he's the founder and director of the Trends Research Institute. It is the number one trend analyst. Gerald predicted and forecast the dot-com meltdown, the 1997 Asian currency crisis, the stock market crash in 87, and increased terrorism against America. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Gerald, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, Delano, thank you for having me on, George. It's always great being on with you.
Oh, boy, what a time. So I was on the air when we were getting the stories last night of raids on all these Paris compounds. Friday, we, of course, all heard the tragic news about that situation. It's affecting people, Gerald. And in New York, where you are, I believe, what's going on there in terms of people being uptight? Because they said today on social network, ISIS did, that New York's a target.
Well, there's a very heavy police presence around. I mean, you feel it all around you. And most of the people, you know, they'll talk about it briefly, but it's really not hitting hard. But you feel it and you see it. And you know, being a New Yorker all my life, you know, watching this, it's quite strange to see the impact. But life basically goes on. But their police presence, and they keep talking about more and more and what they're doing. You know, it's in front of everybody. So subliminally, I imagine it's taking a deep toll.
I think so too. And in terms of, and you're not a sociologist by any means or a psychologist, but how are people reacting out there?
Well, again, you know, it's one-dimensional across the spectrum in the sense that, you know, there's causes and effects. And it's not like I'm talking about this as a, you know, a Monday morning quarterback. I wrote this 20 years ago, and you remember my book, Trends 2000.
Sure do.
It was a national bestseller, 16 different languages. And this is what I wrote, Crusades 2000. Remember, this is 20 years ago, 1996. The seeds of the new Crusades were sown in areas of Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, and Asia. Throughout the Muslim world, devout masses, politically repressed and impoverished, were rising up against their endemically corrupt and inefficient secular governments with their pro-Western allies. Imperialism, directly or indirectly, took the blame for the poverty, the lack of opportunity, and the social and moral decay. Disenfranchised, desperate, politically powerless, Muslims in many countries looked to charismatic clerics to change their destiny.
How true. And for someone, I can't imagine what someone is thinking after they've gone through this heinous act, and then they blow themselves up.
You know, we used to have a saying in the Bronx, when people lose everything and have nothing left to lose, they lose it. And when I said things are being discussed on a one-dimensional aspect, and, you know, we're political atheists. We look at things for the way they are, not the way they want them to be. And we don't take a stand on these. We just see this is what's going on. And what's been going on now is that the United States and its coalitions, particularly the Arab League, you know, I mean, the United States has been in war now. We're going on for 15 years almost.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
And you look at the amount of deaths that have occurred. Between Afghanistan, there was a study just came out, Afghanistan, Libya, Iraq, and Syria, and what am I leaving out? Iraq, Syria, Libya, Afghanistan, it's over a million people who have been killed.
Jeez.
And when you look at Iraq and Afghanistan, And you see,
I guess Yemen, you could throw them
oh,
in
Yemen,
there.
That's the one I,
Yeah.
that's, thank you. That was the one I was thinking of. And by the way, Yemen's not making the news, as you well know.
No, not at all.
And who's, now, what, what's going on in Yemen? Well, the Saudi government from the United States on March 26th, on March 26th, they announced from Washington, D.C., that they were going to attack Yemen to reinstall the guy that the people, for whatever reason, whoever did it, threw out. I mean, this is a sovereign nation, you know. But anyway, they're Yemen, so they're looking at over 1 million dead. Now, let us suppose that you and I are Iraqis, and everything we have is gone, and everybody we love is dead. And we're young guys with no future in front of us.
And we hate.
You think we could be radicalized real quick?
Easy. Easy, and that's what's happening. And they
and
all
that's
they
what's
all
happening.
Hate.
You know, it's cause and effect, and no one wants to look at it. And when you talk about Iraq, I mean, let's remember this, George. The facts that they gave us were not true. And we're still there in a war based on weapons of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda that did not exist. And so, of course, the place is destroyed. Of course you have radicalized people. And again, this is what we wrote about back in 96. You could see it starting to develop.
Oh, you're
the
so
term
smart.
Crusades 2000, that's all this is, by the way. It's the 10th Crusade.
See, and now, Gerald, I mean, how do you stop three or four people from disrupting something if they don't care about their life, if they know they're going to get shot to death or they'll blow themselves up? And so they just go in somewhere and commit murder, and that's what this is. It's thuggery and murder, and they just don't care. That's impossible to stop.
Well, they don't care, again, because they have nothing to care for. They have no lives in front of them. So, you know, as a cliche as it is, with peace comes prosperity. And you go back to before they you know, I mean, you know, when you look at the trends, you know, trend lines begin a long time ago. We're talking about Syria, for example. I mean, you know, after World War One, Sykes-Picot, a Frenchman and an Englishman, you know, they cut up the joint after the Ottoman Empire fell apart. Hey, George, give me a T-square and a ruler. I want to make some real sharp angles here, and we're going to make up new countries. And then the France has been a colonial power in Syria since the end of World War One to the end of World War Two. And then, of course, there was in Algeria. Now they're back in Mali. You know, so there's a lot of hatred. And people don't know the history of this thing. And so the whole Middle East, for example, it's an invention that by the victors of World War One after the fall of the Ottoman Empire. And those clashes between tribes and religious sects and on has been going on for a real long time. And we're in the middle of it.
And Gerald, who organized these people? I mean, they've got money, they've got weapons, they've got vehicles. Somebody somewhere financed these
well,
people.
Well, there are. And everybody knows who the financiers were. Yeah, they're the Saudis, the Arab League, Qatar, United Arab Emirates. These are the ones that are doing it.
See, I knew something was wrong about a year ago when we started hearing more about ISIS. They really weren't that connected, that big at that point. But we would see video pictures from Iraq of miles and miles of trucks and Humvees with all of them waving, holding their flag, holding their rifles in the air, and not one Apache helicopter, not one fighter jet took out that 2-mile-long string, which would have been the easiest target of anything we've ever attacked. Not one plane attacked them. And I just knew at that point there was something wrong.
Again, the facts are there. I mean, when you see what's going on, the Saudis have been the one of the biggest, the United Arab Emirates have been the biggest contributors to this. It's a secular war. It's between the Sunnis and the Shia that have been going on for a real long time.
And notice there's no terrorism directly in Saudi Arabia. That doesn't happen there.
No. You know, I heard Marco Rubio at the last presidential reality show debate. And he goes on to say, you know, why the terrorists hate us. And this is what he said. This is a quote. They hate us because our girls go to school. They hate us because women drive in the United States.
Well, I think he's off base on that.
I think just a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you're going to talk about women not going to school or they hate us because women drive in the United States, how about Saudi Arabia? Oh, yeah, you got a lot of women's rights over there. You know, it's a joyride every day, but you can't drive the car. You know, so, I mean, it's this kind of rhetoric, this one-dimensional kind of thing that's going on without looking at the causes and the effects.
See, I'm going to put a conspiracy hat on for a moment, Gerald. I think that there are some groups out there, well-financed groups, who enjoy seeing what ISIS is doing, and they want to keep fueling the fire.
I would say you're correct in the sense that in fueling the fire means hegemony over different countries and putting in their kinds of belief systems, because that's what a lot of this is about, particularly the Wahhabis, the Saudis. So, yes, there is that. And it's out of control. Look what's going on.
Do you think there's a Western influence behind that, too?
I really don't.
Okay.
I really don't. I think it's mostly Middle Eastern in that sense. Is there a Western influence of the neocon thinking of seeing destabilization and trying to gain more power?
Absolutely.
I would say that neocon mentality, yes, that exists. So I would agree with you. Absolutely.
Can we realistically stop this?
The only way I see to stop it is go back to say, when wasn't it there? And it wasn't there when you had stable governments. When you had, whether you like Assad, hate Assad, you know,
or Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein, they were stable governments.
Exactly. And by the way, Syria, you know, it had a pretty high middle class. It was one of the more prosperous places. You know, I have two Syrian friends that are doctors. You know, I know many years. They had to leave. They're up in Canada now.
Half of my family records are in a church, a Christian church in Aleppo, Syria. If that church is still there.
If the church is still there. Yeah. So under that government, again, like him or not, it was a stable situation. Same thing. You know, I mean, you look, go back to the videos. Anybody could do it. You listen to Hillary Clinton going on, Assad has to go.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's our words. I mean, who are you to say who should go? Gaddafi has to go. Hillary Clinton, Samantha Rice, Susan Powers. And who led the overthrow? Sarkozy of France.
Hey, you know, Gaddafi, after Reagan bombed one of his mansions and killed a wife and a child, he marched to our tune. He stopped any nuclear program. He stopped all the terroristic activities he was involved in. As far as I'm concerned, he was beating to our drum, wasn't he?
Absolutely was. And not only, even to the extent that, you know, all things are connected, by the way, when you put all this together. You go back to the destabilization of Libya after it fell apart. All of a sudden, all these migrants come flowing over.
Yeah.
You go back to our Trends Journal 2011. That's when we had the Great Migration. That was one of the headlines. They were flooding into Italy. When Gaddafi was in power, he made a deal with Italy that people would not be leaving the shores of Tripoli or anywhere in Libya to go into Europe. And he kept it. He kept them out. Now that he's gone, you have a migrant crisis. This is a migrant / refugee, because the migrants are people, and again, it's all tied together. You have, for example, commodity prices now down to 1999 levels in different areas. In total, Zinc, copper, aluminum. You go up and
Oh,
down the
gold
list.
and silver. Silver's, I love silver as an investment, but I still think it could triple, get down a little lower before it goes back up again.
Exactly. So when now you go, and again, I believe in gold, and I believe it was going to go over 2,000. But right now, I think, by the way, gold is near its bottom right about now.
It's very close. You're right.
Yeah, we've been saying 1,050 for a long time, 1,500.
Would a terrorist attack in this country, God forbid, push gold and silver back up again?
Yes,
Okay.
absolutely, because it's the safe, ultimate safe haven
It's the
currency.
haven. Okay.
And forever it's been like that. So going back to the migration and the refugees, you tie it back to the economy, tie it back to Libya. They're flooding out of Ghana. They're flooding out of Congo, Niger, Nigeria, all these resource-rich countries. That's the migration trend. They're leaving in droves. And by the way, it's not only going to be over there. Come south of the border, Chile, Colombia, Venezuela, Brazil, all these natural resource-rich countries they're deep in debt. Their commodities have declined dramatically. Their currencies are crashing with them. You think people are going to be leaving looking for brighter shores? So you're going to have this migration crisis. Again, it's all tied together. Now you put on top of that the refugee crisis. Go back to Tunisia. Go back to Tunisia started falling apart big time after the overthrow of Gaddafi in neighboring Libya. So they're flooding out of these countries. Just to put this into perspective, at the turn of the century, 1900, the beginning of the 20th century, there were approximately 1.6 billion people on the planet.
That's it?
That was it. It took
Wow.
100,000 years to
Now
get
there's
that number.
seven plus.
1.6 billion. Now, exactly. Now it's 7 billion. Now, what do you got? India has that many people, right?
And China, you put those two together.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is now you start putting the numbers together where what, 7.2, 7.3 billion? You want to talk about a refugee crisis? You want to talk about waves of humanity? This is out of control. And that's why we're saying, George, go back to when it was better. And when it was better is when you had these people in their countries, which aren't, again, to honor thy founding fathers, no foreign entanglements, let them do what they're doing. It's not our business. Fix Detroit. You've been to Camden lately? Come up over here, go north of where I am, up to Syracuse, or Utica.
Yeah.
Go through the
Wow.
Rust Belt, and then tell me you're going to fix Syria, Libya, Yemen? So what I'm saying is the only way out that we see it is peace, because with peace comes prosperity. Because if there's no prosperity, you're going to see waves of human beings flooding all over the planet to find a better life, whether it's escaping death or looking for work.
Should we sit down with whoever heads up ISIS, who knows anymore, and say, we got to work this out?
I would. I
Interesting.
would. It's not, again, they want to kill each other because of their religious beliefs. That's their trip. It's not
Well,
ours.
you
And
know what? And
again,
they use that, I think, as a crutch. I'm not sure that's it.
I don't believe it is. I agree. I think it's part of it, but the radicalization comes from everything that I've been reading. Matter of fact, there was even a piece in the Daily Beast recently, not more than a few days ago, of a young guy that left ISIS, and he said it was all about money.
Yeah, I believe that. Gerald, stay with us. Talking about money, I want to talk about the Federal Reserve. When do you think they're going to raise interest rates? And then what happens? Housing is already slowing down. We'll be back in a moment with Gerald Celente on Coast to Coast AM. And Gerald Celente with us. We'll take your phone calls next hour with him as we talk about trends and events that really affect all of us worldwide. And welcome back to Coast, Gerald Celente with us. Gerald, the Federal Reserve, when are they going to raise interest rates? And if they do, what's going to happen?
Well, our best guess, and I guess we go with the majority on this one, is that we're going to see a slight uptick in December, probably 25 basis points.
Like 0.25, is that what that is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the difference it makes is actually pretty big, because you have to, again, look at the total picture on a global, you know, global scale. And I mentioned before about commodity prices and how they're plunging.
Mm-hmm.
You know, copper, iron ore, zinc. You know, iron ore, for example, in 2011, it was going for about $200 a metric ton. Today, it's under $50.
Wow. Well, yeah. That's like oil. Look at oil.
Oil. Again, it's a supply and demand issue, because when you start putting all the pieces together, you can see where there's too much supply and not enough demand. You saw Japan, it's in a recession, despite all that Abenomics. You just saw, you know, a couple of days ago, their economy shrunk 0.8%, second consecutive quarter of decline, despite trillions of yen with this Abenomics. And all that does, by the way, whether it's Abenomics, quantitative easing, zero interest rate policy, or in Europe, where you also now have negative interest rate policy, all this is done, and their quantitative easing scheme as well, that's going on for 16 months, and in a couple of weeks we're going to see if they're going to extend it, and it appears that they will. All it's done is boost the equity markets. And the merger and acquisition activity now is running at record levels. Every day you pick up the paper and you're seeing these mega mergers. What was it? The other day it was, Marriott buying Starwood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's every day, whether it's the chemical companies, the drug companies, the ag, big ag, you name it.
Well, look at the big beer companies. I'm in St. Louis and InBev.
Who would have thought, right?
Yeah.
Who would have thought that a handful would have owned everything? Again, it's all of this cheap money, because they're borrowing it for nothing, and they're making these deals. So, again, putting the whole package together, you're looking now at a global slowdown, despite all of this. Look at the OECD, the Organization of Economic Cooperation and Development, last week downgraded global growth. Go back to the IMF. They downgraded global growth. Look right here in the States. You mentioned it as we were taking a break about how housing starts
mm-hmm.
have plunged, what, 11% in
yep.
October. And this is with record low interest rates. You have, by the way, you have now the percentage of Americans who own homes. It's at a 48-year low.
I know. They're all renting.
They're all renting.
It's unbelievable.
So when we look going back to the interest rate issue, I mentioned what's going on in Europe with Draghinomics. They're going to be meeting in early December, whether or not they're going to have more quantitative easing. So now you see what's going on. As they're talking more and more about raising interest rates, now currencies around the world are starting to even go lower against the dollar, because as interest rates go up, the dollar gets stronger and these currencies get weaker. What does that mean? Well, bring it back to the commodity prices. One of the reasons why these emerging markets gained so much strength is when they had all that quantitative easing. And again, you know, people will say to me, you know, your forecasts are wrong. I say, yeah, you're right. They were wrong. I never in my life would have dreamt that they'd make up a thing called, first of all, too big to fail. Secondly, I never thought there would be a thing called a TARP, that people forgot about that one. I never thought they'd come up with a nearly $1 trillion plan to bail out the banks and other companies under Obama. And I never in my wildest dreams would have thought that we'd have zero interest rate policy since 2008.
I mean, what was it before the crash, Gerald? Do you remember?
Well, actually, they haven't raised interest rates since 2006. They started going up in 2006. And that's when you started seeing the shaking going on in the equity markets. And that's when they held them. Yeah, they were around 4.5%, 5% they were moving toward.
Yeah. Okay, and then it just plummeted.
Yeah, so now you have zero interest rate policy. Now let's go back.
And explain that to folks who say, no, wait a minute, I go and get a loan, I'm not paying 0%. Explain what this means.
It means that when you're one of these big companies, you're borrowing money for basically nothing, very low interest
right.
rates. And so you can afford to do these deals because you're borrowing money for free. And it's the same thing what's going on. When you look at the stock market, these are facts. These aren't, you know, speculation. The two major reasons why stock equity markets have gone up is because one of the merger and acquisition activity, and the second one is stock buybacks. It's carry trade. You're borrowing money for nothing. You're buying back your stock, and you're driving up the prices. I mean, those are facts.
That's smart business, I guess, isn't it?
Exactly. If you can do it, you do it.
Yeah.
So going back to what it means when the dollar goes up, when they had all this quantitative easing, again, the carry trade, you're borrowing dollars for nothing. Now you're going into all these emerging markets, and you're loaning money to businesses and to governments. And they start booming. And then China, you want to talk about quantitative easing? I don't know how you say quantitative easing in Chinese, but boy, they really layered it on. When the panic, after the panic of 08, they created the housing bubble. They built up industry to unprecedented levels with all of their infrastructure rebuilding. So now China's booming. The equity markets, the emerging markets are selling their product, their raw materials to China. And there's a big borrowing going on because you're getting dough for free.
I know, listen to this. I know a guy who runs in, I guess he's a part owner of a company that lends money to companies. He's not a bank. He's like a merchant lender. And they're out of New York and L.A. These companies are all over the place. And I asked him one day, I said, where are you getting the money? And he said, this is money coming from hedge funds and some banks that aren't lending it to normal people and businesses. They give it to us, and we lend it out at a almost astronomical interest rate. And these things are popping up all over the country.
They're popping up all over the country and all over the world because the mutual funds are also very heavily invested in these emerging markets to the tune of an estimated $3 trillion in loans going out to them above and beyond. So that you're exactly right. And that's what's going on. So again, tying it all back together, the dollar goes up. Their currencies are already declining. They're hitting record lows. I mean, the euro now is by the 7-month low against the dollar. The yen's going back down. You're looking at currencies like the real in Brazil, the ringgit, the Indonesian, the Malaysian money, the rupiah, the ringgit. And you're looking at new lows, the Turkish lira. So what happens? When the dollar goes up, their currencies get even weaker.
That's right.
As their currencies get even weaker, they owe all this money that they borrowed when dollars were cheap.
That's
they
right.
have to pay it back in dollars. They're not going to be able to because the commodity prices, what they sell, what they make their money on, they're getting a lot less money for that. You're going to start seeing civil wars, social unrest.
Yep.
Throughout the world, from Venezuela to Bolivia to Colombia to Chile to Ghana to Algeria, Nigeria, around the world. Russia, look at the problems they have. Look at the oil prices. What's their major export? It's going to be like this everywhere. And again,
is this a third world war coming?
I'm afraid it is, unless we stop it. You know, we had a rally here on September 20th. We call it Occupy Peace. The website's occupypeace.us. It's only for us. Again, I'm up here in Colonial Kingston, New York. We held it on the most historic four corners in America, the only place where there's a pre-Revolutionary War building on each corner. We had Ralph Nader here. We had Cindy Sheehan, Dr. Robert Thurman, Gary Null. You know, this was quite an event.
Yeah.
And we did it because I believe in honoring thy founding fathers, beginning with Washington, a real warrior, not these little boys that play, I'm the commander in chief, I'm going to bomb the S out of this, I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. Not, this is a guy that led the troops. We didn't play golf or basketball, shoot pool, drive pickup trucks. The real deal. His farewell address. No foreign entanglements. The world was at war back then, big time. Look what happened to Jefferson, Madison, Adams. Every one of them. No foreign entanglements. And if anybody doesn't think the world was at war, you know, start looking up Napoleon's march to Moscow. When he leaves with, what, 425,000 people, comes back with 10,000.
Yeah. They all died in Russia, didn't they?
That's right. As it got colder, more died. And then you listen to Eisenhower. Again, the real men, the real warriors, they want peace. Eisenhower's famous farewell address. No, about the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, that's right. He warned us.
And this is a five-star general. Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces. He hated war. The only way we're going to prosper, and it's not a cliche that with peace comes prosperity, it's a fact. And not only does it come with financial, you know, you look, America, here we are. The hottest, happiest music this nation ever knew was swing time. It happened during the 30s.
Yeah.
There was no war going on in the United States. And so what I'm saying is, your mind goes, you asked me before, what's going on in New York? I said, yeah, there's this tension. When you have fear and hysteria going on, guess what? There's not a lot of creativity, joy, and beauty. So it's our choice, as I see it. Because you asked me if we're going to World War II, World War III. You listen to every one of the presidential candidates, I guess with the exception of Rand Paul. And I'm a political atheist. Right now, there's nobody I'd vote for. He's the only one speaking about, no, look, we can't get involved with all this stuff. Everyone, you got Jeb Bush yelling out, we should declare war. We should declare war? Do you know the United States has not declared war? That was the other part of Occupy Peace. The United States has not declared war since, Congress has not declared war since World War II.
That's right. I mean, Vietnam, we didn't declare war. Korea, we didn't declare war.
Again, that was, see, that's this Occupy Peace, by the way, George. We have four principles of it. Number one is to close all the military bases overseas, bring home the troops, and secure the homeland. The second element is, rather than building highways in Afghanistan for the military-industrial complex, do you know that we have spent more money rebuilding Afghanistan than the Marshall Plan when adjusted for inflation?
And what good has it done?
Nothing. They're losing the joint. The Helmand Province is going now. The place is in total chaos. And by the way, you start reading some of what's going on with the military. They don't want to go into – you're getting a lot of blowback now from the military. They're saying, no, more troops on there, this isn't going to work. We've gone through this before. There was one report after another coming out now. So going back to what we believe, you bring home the troops, secure the homeland, put the troops together to work like a Work Projects Administration to rebuild our rotted infrastructure.
What do you think of annihilating those countries that are giving weapons to ISIS?
You're going to get rid of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, and these are the people that are supplying them. The facts are there. These are the people that supported the people, particularly in Syria, to overthrow Assad. And they did the same thing with Libya. Do people forget that one? Who are the people that were fighting against Gaddafi? These are the people Gaddafi was trying to keep in place. And these are the ones that they supported to overthrow them. And now look at Libya. It's total mayhem. And well, they're flooding out of Libya into Europe.
This is what I'm confused about in Syria. There's that group that we've supported that we want to overthrow Assad and get him out. Yet there's another group in Syria that everyone's bombing that they claim to be ISIS. Who are these people?
You know, that's what I keep asking. Could you show me what a moderate rebel looks like? You got a name for one?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, name Ahmed. I mean, show me. Who is this? Who are they? Who are, what's a moderate rebel look like?
I think in Syria, we're supporting the same group that we're bombing.
Who knows? Again, that's what I'm saying. It's total chaos, and that's why you're starting to get blowback from the military. because they see there's no, again, all I keep asking people over and over again, okay, you want to do more of the same at a higher level, show me the success that you've had from doing this before. Show me the successes, and then we can start speaking.
There aren't none. There aren't any.
I can't know. I don't know of any.
Neither do I.
So in going back to what we believe, and going back now, you're hearing Jeb Bush saying about going to war, the other elements of Occupy Peace are to force Congress to vote to go to war. You know, we're in Syria now. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact. It's against the Constitution.
What would you do with these refugees? Most governors don't want them. I think they're right.
I do, too. I feel the same way about migration, you know, as immigration. You know, you go back to the Great Depression. They stopped immigration.
Well, what is wrong with this president, Gerald?
It's not only this president. This has been going on before. They keep, because with their, you know, when you look, again, I wrote about this in Trend Tracking back in 1988 and Trends 2000. They started to do this to bring in a lot of cheap labor. The biggest pushes behind the H-1B visas and lighter immigration at that time, when we used to have a thing called manufacturing, was the National Association of Manufacturers. They were bringing in cheap labor. You go back from the Great Depression up until the 60s, you couldn't get in this country. They wanted to solidify our economic base before they brought in other people.
Mm-hmm.
I have Italian relatives who couldn't come here after World War II, even into the 50s. And then they opened up the floodgate. So all I'm saying is stabilize your homeland. And after you have jobs created here, we just went over some numbers. We're looking at home ownership at 48-year lows. You have labor force participation rate down to, 1978 levels, when women weren't in the workforce like they are now, and that's how bad they are. And now you're going to bring in more people? I mean, it just doesn't add up. It doesn't add up logically or factually. You know, emotionally, on no level does it add up.
It seems like we've just lost all common sense.
Again, all you have to do is watch the presidential reality show, and you can see the lack of common sense. It's one cliche after another.
Yeah, they don't get it. They just don't get it.
It's just cliches. No one's looking at the issues. So again, as we're talking about it with the refugees and the migrants, and then you go back to when the Fed raises interest rates, our system, by the way, that in forecasting trends, it's called Globalnomic.
Hold on there, Gerald. We're going to hit the break, come back. We'll talk some more, and we'll take some phone calls for you next.